As a minister of the gospel, and since this is a church of Jesus Christ, I am not at liberty to stand and endorse any candidate. However, that's the most powerful however I've ever heard spoken.
I don't know about you, but that sounded like an endorsement and an acceptance of an endorsement to me. That was made by one Reverend Brown when candidate Kerry was speaking at a church lately. This Charge Booth, I'm sorry, and Senator John Kerry speaking this last Sunday at Mount Olivet Baptist Church in Columbus, Ohio. Now, this was some of the audio we didn't play for you yesterday. We were playing some of the audio from Senator Kerry yesterday, but this was the introduction wherein, under the guise of not endorsing Senator Kerry, it sounds an awful lot like an endorsement, and under the guise of not accepting an endorsement, it sounded an awful lot like the acceptance of an endorsement. The question that I want to pose for you here in the first hour of Issues, Etc., I need your answer to this, because here we are, the last 2 weeks of a presidential campaign, the topic that, among all the other things that are being discussed, are the faith of the candidates and the role of their religion in their policy and in their prospective presidencies past 2004. Should churches that have endorsed candidates, and it happens in this kind of surreptitious, backhanded, oblique, wink wink kind of a way, or it's an endorsement through a voter's guide that is not so much a nonpartisan voter's guide as a slanted voter's guide, telling people this is what you need to know and this is the person you ought to vote for. It gets passed out on Sunday morning. Pastor might even draw attention to it in the Sunday bulletin. It amounts to an endorsement. Should churches that endorse candidates lose their tax-exempt status? The IRS says you can't do that. The IRS says if you have a candidate speaking at your church, which is fine, you can have a candidate speaking at your church, he cannot solicit votes there, and the pastor there cannot, while the guy is at your church, cannot endorse the candidate. He can endorse the candidate as a private individual, apart from being the representative of his church, but he cannot endorse the candidate while the candidate's there. Should churches that do this lose their tax-exempt status? It's Open Lines, Issues, Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. Our call-in numbers, 505-7850 or 1-800-730-2727. It's Open Lines in the first hour. We're going to be talking about this. Should churches that endorse candidates lose their tax-exempt status? We're coming to you live. It's October the 20th, and it's Wednesday. Those call-in numbers again, 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. Now, in the second hour of the program, Dr. Stephen Hine will be our guest. He spent 23 years as a professor of theology. If you've been listening to this series that we're doing on the Augsburg Confession, it's going to be part three today, then you're going to want to tune in and listen. Yesterday we talked about the heart and center of the Lutheran Reformation. Today we're going to talk about what is very next to the heart and center of the Lutheran Reformation, and that is the teaching on the office of the ministry, or, to put it more accurately, the means of grace, the preaching of the gospel, and the administration of the sacraments. And we'll also talk about proper church order according to this 16th century Reformation document, the Augsburg Confession. Then, in the third hour of the program, a religion roundup with Uwe Simonetto. We're going to be talking to him about several things. First of all, this Lambeth document that came out earlier this week that called for the Episcopal Church USA to express its regret over having consecrated an openly gay bishop. We had some callers yesterday. We were talking to a guest about this. Said, is regret the same thing as an apology? Is it regret or is it remorse? What's going on here? We'll answer that question with Uwe Simonetto. And we'll also talk about the growing influence of Islam in Europe and in America with Uwe Simonetto during our religion roundup in the last 25 minutes of Issues, Etc. Our call-in number is 505-7850 or 1-800-730-2727. I was in church. I don't get to go to church as often as I'd like to with my family. I go to church every Sunday, but I'm often preaching. I was in church a couple weeks ago, and I noticed, when the weather was still nice, set up out in the parking lot of the church, a voter registration booth. It was just a table with one of the members sitting there. And it was a place where, if you were want to, while you were walking from the service, the end of the service, over to where we serve our coffee in Danish, You could, if you hadn't already, register to vote. Now, this was obviously prior to the deadline for the registration for voting. Churches are often used as places. They're used as polling places. They're used as opportunities to register. I didn't think anything of it. There were no signs. There was no bunting. It was just voter registration. If you walked up to the table, you could register as a Democrat. You could register as a Republican, as an independent, as anything you wanted to register as. Big deal. This is well within the church's purview. It's just an opportunity where people gather, and it's a convenient place for people to register. I mean, they could set it up at Walmart, for that matter. It doesn't make that much difference, does it? No one blinks an eye at this kind of a thing, or very few blink an eye at this kind of a thing. It's quite a different matter if I were to walk into church on Sunday morning, and there was, say, just for the sake of argument, President George W. Bush addressing the congregation from the pulpit. Now, if my pastor got up and said, I endorse this man, he would be running afoul of IRS regulations. If he said, vote for this man, I'm voting for this man, he would be running afoul of IRS regulations. Do you want your pastor to endorse candidates? Now, let's say George W. Bush isn't there on Sunday morning, but nonetheless, your pastor says, look, we're getting to crunch time. We're within 2 weeks of the election. And folks, I'm going to lay it on the line. This is who I'm voting for, and I encourage you to do the same. Do you want your pastor to do this? 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. Now let's hear these two cuts in their entirety. Here first is Pastor Charles Booth of Mount Olivet Baptist Church in Columbus, Ohio. And then we'll hear very shortly thereupon presidential candidate Senator John Kerry. Now, as you listen, I want your answer to this question. Should Mount Olivet, that congregation in Columbus, lose its IRS tax-exempt status? Listen carefully. Here's Pastor Charles Booth.
As a minister of the gospel, and since this is a Church of Jesus Christ, I am not at liberty to stand and endorse any candidate. However, that's the most powerful however I've ever heard spoken.
Okay, so here is a backhanded endorsement from the Reverend Booth. Should this congregation lose its tax-exempt status? This was Sunday morning. This was the pastor introducing Senator Kerry. There was a speech/sermon made afterwards by Senator Kerry. And Pastor Booth began by saying, I can't endorse him. However, and then he just allowed the pregnant pause to speak for itself. And of course, the message was received loud and clear, obviously, from the applause of the congregation. And when Senator Kerry had the opportunity to take to the podium, he made sure that everyone understood that however, was a very important and weighty however, and that silence that followed thereupon was significant. It spoke volumes. It was, for all intents and purposes, an endorsement, wasn't it? Should they lose their tax-exempt status? 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. In connection with this, there is at least a call for an inquiry, an IRS inquiry, into a previous appearance of Senator Kerry at another church. This was a church, the Friendship Missionary Baptist Church. This was back on October 10th when Senator Kerry appeared there with the pastor. That would have been Pastor Gaston Smith. Also with, I think, Jesse Jackson was there, and I think Al Sharpton were there as well. Remember, this was the time when they talked about gay marriage and how did gay marriage get inserted into the political agenda for today. Well, Americans United for the Separation of Church and State, in the person of Barry Lynn, their executive director, are calling upon the IRS to look into that visit and look into what happened there. They say that was a political rally. It was not a church service. They say, the Americans United for Separation of Church and State, that this appearance by Senator Kerry amounted to a violation of IRS regulation, and that the IRS ought to look into pulling the tax-exempt status of Friendship Missionary Baptist Church. So there's Barry Lynn, who seems to be painting with the brush on equal sides. He often complains about Republican candidates, too. Here he's complaining about an appearance by Senator Kerry and what happened there. saying, look, their IRS status should be pulled. What do you think? 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. These things, of course, are not rare. Here's another example of an endorsement by a church leader. This is the Reverend William Shaw. He's president of the National Baptist Convention.
I'm fully supportive of Brother Kerry's election because I think that we've got to make a change. This administration has, with the support of a religious body, waged a war that was unadvisable to begin with, that has brought catastrophe to the country.
Now, as far as I know, this was not made in a church, but it was made on behalf of the leader, the president of the National Baptist Convention, a denomination in its own right. I am fully in support of Senator Kerry's election. That's an endorsement. You don't have to say the word endorse to make it an endorsement correctly. So, this is an entire church body, the National Baptist Convention. Should they lose their tax-exempt status? Or could this be a case where perhaps the Reverend William Shaw was speaking as an individual and not for his church body? You see, according to the regulations, and it gets a little fuzzy here, it gets a little hazy here, a pastor can individually endorse a candidate, even in public. He can individually do this, but he cannot do it in any way so as to give the impression to anyone that he's speaking on behalf of his congregation or his church body. So do these things cross the line? 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. The questions I want your answer to: should churches that endorse candidates either blatantly, which is rather rare, or in this kind of backhanded wink-wink way, which happens on both sides, should they lose their tax-exempt status? Do you want your pastor to endorse a presidential candidate? The stakes are high. Everyone is saying this is the most important presidential election in recent history. Do you want your pastor to step up to the plate because the stakes are so high? And you know, when you sit in church on Sunday morning, you think, okay, for instance, I'm pro-life, I'm going to vote for George W. Bush. But you know full well that there are people sitting across the aisle from you there in church or up a few pews who are going to vote their pocketbook. We had a caller yesterday says, look, I'm going to vote my fiscal concerns, and that's why I'm voting for Kerry. Is this the time your pastor should stand up and say, look, you cannot vote your pocketbook. You got to vote the life ticket. You got to vote for this guy or for that guy. 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. Or what about this? The pastor doesn't say anything, but as you drive into the parking lot on Sunday morning, you see pastor's car. Everybody knows pastor's car. And there on the back bumper or the back window is a W04 sticker or a Kerry Edwards sticker. Should your pastor have the sticker on his car? I mean, after all, he didn't have to say anything. The tail end of his car says it for him. 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. Most of us know where our pastors live. Perhaps we've visited their home from time to time, been invited over. Well, you drive through the neighborhood, there's pastor's house. What if he's got a Kerry or a Bush sign out in his yard? Should he do this? I mean, he is saying thereby who he's going to vote for. 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. It's open lines, issues, etc. Here for the first hour of the program. Then we'll be talking with Dr. Stephen Hine about the Augsburg Confession, part three of our five-part daily series on that very important Reformation document. We're coming to you live this Wednesday. It's October the 20th. There are rules, by the way, governing these things. And as our conversation continues, I will get into a few of those rules. Some of them are rather fuzzy. Some of them leave a bit of wiggle room. Our call-in number is 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. Up first, calling from St. Louis, Donna is on the line. Hi, Donna.
Hello.
Hi, Donna.
Hi.
What do you think? Should churches that endorse candidates lose their tax-exempt status?
Yes, I do.
All right.
I find this so interesting. I've been so frustrated with this issue. I never... Chris on Hardball the other day was talking about Catholics were said to, say you should vote for Bush because of the stem cell, but they never say, he said church is intruding too much, and yet every campaign we have, the Democrats are in a they're just in a Baptist church. Even Sunday they show Bush leaving church, they show Kerry talking at the pulpit, and I think that is so wrong, and I don't know why it isn't more in the news or why there are not more outraged people. If we had a past Bush come to our Lutheran church, I don't think it would go over. I just don't think they could do it.
So if you find, let's say, for instance, the case that we laid before you there, the Reverend Booth, his congregation there, Mount Olivet Baptist Church in Columbus, Ohio, he says, I can't endorse them, but it sounds an awful lot like an endorsement. They should lose their tax-exempt status.
Yes, I don't think they should even be at the pulpit. Any candidate, any Republican or Democrat, they say it's supposed to be, because they're not up there giving a sermon.
Okay, one more question before I let you go. What about your pastor telling the people, not standing and making an endorsement, you're obviously against that, but simply informing people informally in conversation who he is voting for? Should he keep that to himself?
I think as a person, he is allowed to do that. I don't think he could do it in the church environment or whatever, but as a person, I would separate those two.
So you wouldn't have you wouldn't have a problem on the golf course. He says, well, you know, by the way, I'm just voting for Bush or I'm voting for Kerry. But if he were in the church carrying out his duties, you wouldn't approve of him mentioning
that. Right. Although some congregation people hold a pastor a little bit higher, and maybe he should keep it to himself. I don't hold him. I mean, I hold him, you know, as our shepherd. And so it all depends, you know, how strong they feel about that. But I that would probably be all right on the golf course.
All right, Donna, thank you very much for your call. What do the rest of you think? 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. Car phone callers, first-time callers, internet callers will all get top priority. 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. And I haven't even mentioned yet, or I have only mentioned briefly, voter guides. That's one of the things that kind of slips in there sometimes. Let's talk with Sandra, who calls from her car. Sandra, welcome to Issues, Etc.
Hello. I am a pastor's wife in Central Illinois, and I really feel that a pastor has an identity of his own as an American citizen, not necessarily that they need to be preaching from the pulpit where their, you know, conviction lies, but definitely putting bumper stickers on their car. Yes, everybody knows it's the pastor's car, but there's also a great way to tell people, yes, I think this particular person is in line with the biblical beliefs, and this is why.
Now, do you think it amounts to an endorsement?
Well, I'm sure it does. When you have a particular bumper sticker on your car, I'd say, yeah, that's an endorsement. But as an individual, you have that right. And I think it's a little bit, you're asking a lot about from a pastor or his family to say, you know, go ahead and be totally neutral in this. I think that's a little bit unrealistic.
Okay, just stay on for a second.
Where are we
going to then, and I'm just pursuing this with you a little bit.
Sure.
Where are we going to then draw the line? Okay, so we've got the bumper sticker on the car.
Mm-hmm.
And we both agree that that amounts to an informal endorsement. There's nothing illegal or untoward about that, even with regard to the IRS. He could stand in the congregation and say, I personally endorse this person, when he make it clear he's not speaking for the congregation.
Sure.
Okay, where do we then draw the line? What about in Bible class? Someone says, Pastor, who are you voting for? Simple question.
Well, I'm a big believer in telling people exactly where you stand. And it all comes down to the IRS code if you really want to know where all these legalities come from, apparently. And when a pastor is voting according to what the Bible teaches, and, you know, that's got the life issue, it's got a lot of different issues that come out in these election years, then as long as he's teaching along with it, this is why.
You're assuming, Sandra, that he's going to be, say, voting for the pro-life candidate. What if he had a Kerry sticker on his car?
Well, he'd be hard-pressed then, I think, to back that up biblically. But I guess when you're an individual, though, you have that right to say that. You cannot strip away somebody's individuality.
Well, we're talking about prudence and not rights here, because
the right
exists, and thank you very much for the call.
That's true.
I appreciate the input. Prudence, being judicious about it, being discreet. Here's the thing. Someone says, look, I'm pro-life. I don't have a problem with my pastor having a Bush 04 sticker on his car. That makes a good witness to the rest of us pro-lifers here, and maybe encourages a few people sitting on the fence. But what if pastor's got a carry sticker on the car? He shouldn't have that there, because that's giving those people in the congregation who are weak on this life issue an out. When they see that pastor's going to vote for carry, they might even be encouraged to do it even more so, even more firmly, and fudge on this life issue. Or maybe a Nader sticker. It's Open Lines, Issues, Etc. Our call-in number is 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. In the few minutes here before we go to the break, voters' guides are another thing here. I'm looking at the Christian Coalition voters' guide. It's got a nice picture of George W. Bush. It's got a nice picture of John Kerry. In between them, a series of issues. Some of them particularly of interest to Christians. Some of them I can't figure out why they're here. I mean, some of them are solidly biblical, moral issues pertaining to Christians where God's word clearly and unequivocally speaks. Say, marriage, the protection of marriage. Abortion. You could even talk about, there's banning partial birth abortion. There's public financing for abortion. You could even include kind of in a peripheral way, say, the elimination of the marriage penalty tax. You could argue marriage is a good thing, shouldn't be penalized. I'll even allow that into the corral there. But what about federal firearms registration and licensees of gun owners? That's on the Christian Coalition issue list for the two candidates. Now, this isn't just any old voter's guide. This is the Christian Coalition. This goes to congregations. This, in fact, is intended to be handed out by their liaisons in Christian congregations to other Christians. Affirmative action is on there. Placing U.S. troops under U.N. control. Allowing the privatization of Social Security accounts. Educational choice. I guess you could argue that this is a parental issue, a parental authority issue. I don't know. I'll allow that one in there. But prescription drug benefits for Medicare recipients. No, there is no point here on the support of Israel. No, there isn't. On the Christian Coalition, I don't know why. Because at least according to many evangelicals, that would be a biblical issue that you could evaluate the two candidates on. Now, when we come back from this break, I'm going to talk more about this Christian Coalition Voters Guide. It appears to be nonpartisan. It claims to be nonpartisan. It claims to be completely balanced. But there is a secret here that you have to dig for, and I'll share it with you on the other side of the break. You see, even the voters' guides, when they claim to be nonpartisan, can actually amount to, well, electioneering in a Christian congregation, which is precisely what the IRS regulations are intended to prevent, electioneering. It's Open Lines, Issues, Etc. for your phone calls. Anything you want to talk about, 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727.
Talk radio for the thinking Christian. You're listening to Issues, Etc.
Would there have been a Reformation without a Renaissance, a flowering of knowledge, science, art, and exploration throughout Western civilization? How are these two movements, the Renaissance and the Reformation, related? Our Issues, Etc. book of the month for October is actually two books, The Renaissance and Reformation Movements. The two-volume set is $40.99 or $23.99 per book. You can call to order The Renaissance and Reformation Movements from Concordia Publishing House any weekday during regular business hours. 1-800-325-3040. 1-800-325-3040. You can also browse before you buy at our website, issuesetc.org. Under the What's New section, you'll find the Issues, Etc. book of the month for October, The Renaissance and Reformation Movements. 1-800-325-3040. Issuesetc.org.
Pray for people who don't know what they believe. This Global Minute highlights the Eastern European country of Albania. This man, Gentian, says people call themselves Muslims or Christians, but they don't know what these names mean.
Most of the people in Albania are not very religious, in the sense of a lot of them for a long time didn't even know what they were. They would have to go and ask their parents or their grandparents, and a lot of what they say are, let's say, the Muslims. I guess a huge percent of them never went to a mosque or don't own a Quran.
He says it's the same with some professing Christians. They don't attend services regularly or read the Bible. Albanians are still reaping the effects of decades of forced communism when the goal was to wipe out all religion. But good news, Christ Church is growing. Pray more Albanians will learn what it means to truly be a Christian. Expand your mission vision. Visit missionvisionnetwork.org.
Welcome to the Meyer Minute. Last week, the Supreme Court announced that it would hear two cases about the posting of the Ten Commandments in government buildings. Now, that's a thorny issue, and people of faith take both sides. I think there's a more fundamental issue for Christians and Jews, one that the court cannot decide, one that is in us, not external and posted in some building. It's commonly observed that we live in a time when most people do not believe in absolute truth. In my preaching, I have brought this up to my listeners and said, with a smile in my mind, I know you God-fearing churchgoers are different. Why, I could call on any one of you at random to stand up here and now, and you could recite the Ten Commandments from memory. After all, you still believe that there is absolute truth. You should see the people squirm and look down. Some people tell me at the church door, I can't recite them, but I know what's right. Now, think about that. I know what's right. No longer is something right because it's divinely revealed truth, but because I know, I decide. That's a massive shift in understanding reality. Gothic church walls don't insulate churchgoers from dangerous, faddish opinions. What's the basis for your opinion about what is right and what is wrong?
There's a congregation whose doors are open for you, right in the heart of the metropolitan area in Ladue. It's Village Lutheran Church, 9237 Clayton Road, just 1 mile west of the Galleria. Village Lutheran Church is an underwriter of Issues Etc. Their phone number, area code 314-993-1834. Village Lutheran Church in Ladue, www.villagelutheranchurch.org.
As a minister of the gospel, and since this is a Church of Jesus Christ, I am not at liberty to stand and endorse any candidate. However, that's the most powerful however I've ever heard spoken.
That was Pastor Charles Booth and Senator John Kerry speaking this Sunday at Mount Olivet Baptist Church in Columbus, Ohio. My question for you during Open Lines, Issues, etc., during this hour for the next 25 minutes, should Pastor Booth's congregation lose its tax-exempt status? Now, technically, he just completely broke the rules there, but should it lose its tax-exempt status? It's not rare. 505-7850. 1-800-730-2727. This thing happens. It happens not only when the microphones and the cameras are pointed at the various people who are speaking at churches on Sunday morning during election time. Do you want your pastor to endorse a presidential candidate? 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727, especially given the fact that there are people in your congregation who need some guidance. There are people who might not be fully informed on the issues. They might not realize what it might entail if there were a, say, President Kerry, or for that matter, I guess, a President Bush for a second term. Should your pastor endorse a candidate? It's a matter of guiding these people who might be ignorant or wrong-headed in their thinking. 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. What about your pastor having a Kerry or a Bush bumper sticker on his car? 505-7850. 1-800-730-2727. Or a yard sign at his house. I have once seen a yard sign at a church, but I think it was stuck there probably by vandals and quickly taken down. And I was talking before about these voter guides, and I'll come back again to this Christian Coalition voter guide. If you go to the Christian Coalition website, they don't just give it to you. You got to actually sign up for it and give them all your information. I had to go to D. James Kennedy's website where he gives them out free. And by the way, I'll come back to D. James Kennedy here in just a few minutes. It comes from the Christian Coalition. As I said, it has all sorts of issues. Some of the issues I think belong there because they're pertinent to Christians, because God's word actually speaks, thus saith the Lord, on them. And others, who knows why they're gun control, the UN, Medicare recipients, whether or not they should be able to get prescription drug benefits, whether or not people ought to be able to opt out of Social Security and use a private account. God's word has nothing to say on these issues. Ergo, I don't see why they're pertinent to Christians. However, with that said, the interesting thing about this voting guide is the candidates' support or opposition to these issues is listed in either category under George W. Bush or John Kerry. It says here in the fine print at the bottom of the voting guide, this is not to be construed as an endorsement of any candidate or party, but you got to read a little farther in the fine print. And then, between the lines, each candidate was sent a 2004 federal issue survey by mail or by facsimile. When possible, the positions of the candidates on the issue were verified and determined by using voting records and or public statements. What is not included in the information surrounding this voter's guide from the Christian Coalition on the presidential election is that, yes, both candidates were sent the survey. Only one of them actually filled it out, and that was George W. Bush. Senator John Kerry did not fill out the Christian Coalition's survey. Now you say, well, they could figure out his, they say they figure out his issues from his voting record or his public statements. Fine. That may well be true. However, there are several categories here under John Kerry that say no response. No response. Now, this looks to me, maybe I'm nitpicking, but it looks to me like an implication that while he was given an opportunity to respond, he didn't respond. Actually, technically, they should have put no response under every issue here, if they were being honest. You see, what the Christian Coalition did was fill in the blanks for Senator Kerry. And where they couldn't come up with a vote or a public statement, they put no response. Rather, maybe they should have put there unknown. And that would have also been honest. Was it unethical for the Christian Coalition in its 2004 voter's guide for the presidential candidates to simply fill in the blanks for Senator Kerry when Kerry did not respond to their survey, upon which they claim to have based this voter's guide? 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. Now, this isn't just something that is out there on the web to be had. This is something that the Christian Coalition intends, if you want to sign up as one of their liaisons, for you to take to church and hand out on Sunday morning. Now, it says it does not amount to or should be construed as an endorsement for any candidate or party. But is this another example of kind of the wink-wink endorsement? You find these things in church. You say, well, here in church. And it does seem to at least run in favor of President George W. Bush. Would you approve if your church allowed these voters' guides to be handed out on a Sunday morning? 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. Now, we've highlighted here in the course of this conversation so far the religious left. That is, the Reverend Booth, with his wink and a nod endorsement of Senator Kerry. And we mentioned earlier the president of the National Black Baptist Conference. He actually came out and said, I'm fully in support of the election of Senator Kerry to the presidency. The religious left obviously doesn't have a big problem, at least in those two cases, of issuing endorsements of one sort or another. However, the religious right is as anxious about this as is the religious left. We've talked about this a bit before. Dr. D. James Kennedy has been for several years behind a House bill It's referred to as the Houses of Worship Free Speech Restoration Act. I'm sure you've heard about this. Maybe you've even read about it in your church bulletin. What it basically does is propose an amendment to the IRS code. To Section 501 of the Internal Revenue Code of 1986, it proposes, well, not so much an amendment, but an addition of a paragraph, and it's couched in legalese, but I would summarize it by basically saying a church cannot be penalized under IRS regulations for the content, preparation, or presentation of any homily, sermon, teaching, dialectic, or other presentation made during religious services or gatherings. Now, the backers of this bill, and including Dr. D. James Kennedy, are completely upfront about this. What they're talking about is they want the opportunity to be able to electioneer in churches. They want to amend the IRS code so that churches can endorse candidates, so churches can campaign, so that they can electioneer. Do you support this? 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. This bill, this Houses of Worship's Free Speech Restoration Act, would remove all IRS penalties or ramifications if there were endorsements. It would make what the Reverend Booth did here in our soundbite in endorsing Senator John Kerry on Sunday morning at his church, Mount Olivet Baptist Church in Columbus, Ohio, it would make it perfectly fine. There would be no ramifications from the IRS. What do you think about it? 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. Paul's up next. Paul, welcome to Issues Etc.
Hi, Todd. Can you hear me?
Yes, I certainly can.
It's strange. In Minneapolis, two reporters were just suspended from their newspaper because they attended a music function that was political in nature for Mr. Kerry. Military personnel, active duty military personnel, can't politic. And here we have a man claiming to be a pastor of the Gospel of Jesus Christ, bend the words a little bit, but we all know what he intended. It's funny, I was reading Kleinig's Leviticus commentary, and I would suggest that that pastor in Columbus, Ohio, do the same about misusing God to promote secular left-hand kingdom agendas.
Paul, thank you for the call. You know, that's the theological concern. The theological concern, we've been talking here kind of about the IRS concern. And I want to get to the nexus of those two things before we run out of time here in the first hour of the program. But the theological concern is, if the church's message is, and the church's, Christ has put the church here on earth for the preaching of the gospel, for the proclamation of the forgiveness of sins to the sinner, then, at the very least, I think you can argue that politicking in the church on Sunday morning is a colossal waste of time. Certainly, you may be furthering the social and moral agenda of the church in the culture, but the church has better things to do with its time, in particular on Sunday morning, than allow a politician into the pulpit who is going to, at the very least, give you a twisted version of the gospel. At the very best, you might not mention anything and leave God's word alone and not twist it. It's better for them just to give a political speech and not try to quote the Bible. But for some reason, politicians can't resist quoting the Bible when they're in front of a bunch of religious people in a church on Sunday morning. So the theological concern is this what the church has been put here on earth to do? To be an arm of one or the other political parties, to be a very useful tool in the hands of prospective candidates. Make no mistake about it. That's what it is. That's what's happening here. This is the classical outcome of American civil religion, where the church is used in the interest of the state. I mean, this goes beautifully with American civil religion. The church becomes a willing servant to the state. Now, even those of you who think that we ought to be politicking in church say, now, wait a minute, that's not what we're trying. We're not trying to be servants of the state here. No. That's not what we're doing. You tell me how not. How am I wrong? When you say, look, okay, we got 2 weeks to an election, and I know that we could be preaching God's word, but golly, here's the candidate, and he wants to come in and talk to us, and wouldn't it be helpful to inform the voters here? And that's part of what we need to do is keep people well informed on the issue, so let's let him talk. So pastor doesn't preach a sermon that Sunday. The politician gets up and makes a speech. And even though the pastor and the congregation may not endorse that particular politician, they've taken the time that ought to be devoted to God's word. Remember the Sabbath day to keep it holy. It doesn't say remember the Sabbath day so you can use it to whatever ends you want to during, and especially if it's an election year, you could use the Sabbath day to promote your candidate. It says remember the Sabbath day to keep it holy. The God of American civil religion, this God that would demand that the church be a servant to the state and to the political machinery of our government, is not the God of Christianity in any shape, matter, or form. In fact, one really cannot be sure, except on a case-by-case basis, when you invite a politician in, he may wax eloquent and opine about God all day long. One might never be sure, except on a case-by-case basis, what God he is talking about. He might be talking about the generic God of American civil religion, which, according to the current status of American civil religion, is the same God as the Muslim and the Jew and the Hindu and the Buddhist and the Wiccan, and it's the God that everyone worships, each in their own way. That's the God of American civil religion today, the universalist God. You know, I've used the term here that in American civil religion, the church becomes a tool or a servant of the state. I think we ought to put it in starker terms than that. I think the word we ought to use is prostitution. You would be appalled if a woman put up on the market her body for mere money. We call such people prostitutes, right? Well, the church, with the treasure of the gospel, is more than willing to offer its pulpit for the purposes of a political campaign. It looks to me a lot like prostitution, especially when the church in her true virtue, in as the bride of Christ, has something far more precious to proclaim on a Sunday morning than this politician's views or that politician's views. Prostitution, I think that's a good word for it. We've got 15 minutes left in open lines. Give me a call, 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. In the next hour, we'll continue our series with Dr. Stephen Hine on the Augsburg Confession. Our open lines, issues, etc. remains for about 15 minutes here. Our call-in number is 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. Should churches that endorse candidates either explicitly or implicitly, and we all know what we're talking about, and if you are closing your eyes saying, no, I don't know what you're talking about, Pastor, you're just lying to yourself. You know when the wink, wink, and the nudge occurs, and you're willing to give it a pass. Should churches that do this lose their IRS status? And by the way, what's the big deal? If you disagree with what I say about the church prostituting itself, if you disagree where you say, look, the church has two functions, to preach the gospel and to somehow bring about God's kingdom here on earth through the political process. Okay, let's concede that for a moment. If the church has more than one function, not only get people to heaven, but to get people to the polls. If this is in fact true, and if it is an important function, a God-mandated function of the church in the world, then why should the IRS tax code stop you? If it is the pastor's duty to tell people how to vote, if it is the church's duty to tell people how to vote and who to vote for, and I know some of you believe it is, then why are you letting the tax code stop you? It's just money. Is money so precious to you that you would fail to carry out a mandate of God for the church in the world just so that you don't have to pay property taxes or sales tax as a congregation? Really? If the IRS suddenly said you couldn't preach the gospel and retain your tax-exempt status, would you stop preaching the gospel? If, in fact, you're right that the church has the duty to endorse candidates and to tell people how to vote, and the only thing standing in your way is the IRS code, why let that stand in your way? Why not just pay the taxes? Because any church could do this. Any church could do this. They could pay the taxes, forfeit their tax-exempt status, and they could politic every Sunday. They could invite anyone they wanted in. They could endorse candidates. They could hold a square dance with the candidates. They could put up the red, white, and blue. They could do everything. They could put up the big posters. They could bring in the bands. Anytime they wanted to. The only price they'd have to pay is that they'd have to pay taxes. Is that such a big thing, stopping you from doing from what you think the church ought to do? 505-7850-1-800-730-2727. Do you want your pastor to endorse a presidential candidate? Be honest with me. 505-7850-1-800-730-2727. Is it appropriate for your pastor to have a Kerry or a Bush bumper sticker on his car? Everyone knows whose the pastor's car is. In some congregation, he even has his own parking space, so even if you didn't recognize his car, you could tell which one it was. 505-7850-1-800-730-2727. What about the yard sign in your pastor's yard? Is that going over the line? 1-800-730-2727 is our call-in number, 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. Let's hear again the president of the National Baptist Convention. Has he gone too far? Listen carefully. This is the Reverend William Shaw.
I'm fully supportive of Brother Kerry's election, because I think that we've got to make a change. This administration has, with the support of a religious body, waged a war that was unadvisable to begin with, that has brought catastrophe to the country.
So he's got his reasons. He doesn't like the war policy, and he's willing to come out and say that he's fully in favor of Senator Kerry's election. Has he gone too far? Should the National Baptist Convention lose its tax-exempt status? One might argue he could hardly make a public statement like that to the press, knowing who he is, realize he can't say, oh, I forgot I was the president of the National Baptist Convention. It's going to be read as an endorsement. 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. Randy's calling from his car. Randy, welcome.
Hello.
Hi.
Yeah, I was just wondering, you know, the church doesn't get a vote in the election, so why should they be taxed at all? That sounds like a taxation without representation.
Well, they do own property, and they do buy things.
Yeah, but they still don't get a vote for that. So I just wonder why they would be taxed. You know, they're taxed for it. They don't get a vote, so why is the IRS even regulating it at all? They really shouldn't have any say in
well,
it.
Well, they don't get taxed, you realize, as long as they don't engage in or violate the strictures of the tax code. They don't get taxed.
Right, but this pastor, then, if he does get taxed, he still doesn't get a vote.
Well, should the church get a vote, then?
I would think so, if they're getting taxed for it.
So the whole church should get one vote in an election?
At some way, yeah.
I'd never heard that before, Randy. Thank you very much. That's interesting. The whole church, whole congregation, should be able to register one vote. I'd like to see the voters' meeting where that one goes down. I'd love to see that one. You might discover a lot of things about your congregation or your pastor that you never knew. You say, okay, it's time to decide on what vote we're going to cast in the presidential election. You think voters' meetings on whether or not to repaint the parking lot lines last a long time? That one lasts forever. Yeah, it's amazing. You know, a church that wouldn't divide over whether or not God is triune or not would probably divide over who to vote for if the churches were given one big collective vote. Kerry, Bush, no, it's time to divide. Let you be anathema. I mean, they didn't divide over whether you believe God is three in one. They didn't divide over whether or not, Jesus Christ rose from the dead. You can believe whatever you want to. In the meantime, the pastor prays with Muslims and Buddhists and Sikhs and Hindus. But golly, if you try to figure out who you're going to vote for president. Of course, that's kind of the situation we're in right now, isn't it? That's the reason why you got guys like D. James Kennedy who say the most pressing issue for the church today is for us to get out from under that restrictive, tax-exempt rule and be able to politic. We really need to be able to... Is that the most pressing need for the church today? Really? I just want you to think about it for a moment. Is there any other organization that can take up the slack if the church spends its time politicking and not preaching the gospel? What other organization in the world, what other institution in the world is going to take up the slack if the church drops the ball on the gospel, on preaching the forgiveness of sins in Jesus Christ? Who's going to do it then if the church doesn't do it? Okay, so every Sunday that a church allows a politician into the pulpit to make their pitch on the various issues of the day is one Sunday that the gospel doesn't get preached. Let's just allow that. It's simple math, right? Who's going to take up the slack? Is there any other institution, any other organization, any other entity in human experience that's going to preach the gospel if the church drops the ball? Who? As far as I know, the church is the only entity on earth that has the gospel to preach. Other organizations, other entities, other communions, whatever that you want to call them, can do the politicking. But the church is the only one with the gospel. Oh, by the way, Sunday night on the program, we're going to be revisiting this subject in a way as we talk about two kingdom theology with Pastor Mark Sell of Concordia Publishing House. That'll be the subject for Sunday night's nationally broadcast issues, etc. It's heard here locally in St. Louis on 91.5 FM from 10 to 11 on Sunday nights. Pastor Mark Sell on two kingdom theology coming up Sunday night. Now, when we come back from this break, Dr. Stephen Hine is going to be our guest. If you've been listening to this series so far this week, you will want to be tuned in the next hour. We're walking through the Augsburg Confession, this very important beginning document of the Reformation, outlining what it teaches on various things. Today, we're going to take up the issue of the means of grace. How is it that men obtain faith? And what should the church look like? What are the powers and authorities and proper function of the church? We will be talking about the church in the next hour of Issues, Etc. with Dr. Stephen Hine. Then, in the third hour of the program, we'll be spending 25 minutes with Uwe Simonetto during a religion roundup. We'll be talking about the Islamization of Western Europe and perhaps of America, and we'll also discuss whether or not this call for an expression of regret on the part of the Episcopal Church USA from the Anglican Communion is really just, what one person has called a typical Anglican fudge. Not really calling for anything, much of anything. We'll talk about that in the last 25 minutes. Dr. Stephen Hine is next.
Listen weekday afternoons to Issues Etc. Issues Etc. is a listener-supported program. Your financial support is critical for Issues Etc. to continue. Our address is Post Office Box 9360, St. Louis, Missouri 63117. Or you can contact us via our website at www.issuesetc.org. That's www.issuesetc.org. For a cassette copy of the program, call 1-800-737-0172. That's 1-800-737-0172. Opinions expressed are not necessarily those of this station or the Jubilee Network. Issues, Etc. is a broadcast service of the Lutheran Church, Missouri Synod.